What? Terrence, this is how we start next corner. Let's go. Let's do it together.
I won't partake in this. I won't be a part of what this is. I don't know what this is, but this isn't 1984, and I won't be a part of this.
This is how we start every next corner. He's cringing over there. My boy Terrence Oglesby, welcome to the next corner.
Thank you, Nick. I'm happy to be on. We've been talking about doing podcasts for, 2 years now? We did one when we both started. It was a long time ago now, 3 years ago. So it's come a long way since then. I'm happy Nick's Corner is having a tremendous amount of success. We're going global. We're going global on Nick's Corner. So, no, thank you for having me on. I'm here in your lovely apartment in Barros, visiting some family. You treat the man like a king. I got my feet up. I got coffee in hand. And I got socks that cover my entire foot. So that's a big thing.
So this is the thing. This is my podcast, and you're the only one that's been talking for like last 2 minutes.
Are we already going to talk about who's passing the ball? We've been here for less than a minute and 15 seconds, and you're out here already trying to shut my game down? Is this what we're doing?
So this is my friend Theo. He's notorious for being all about himself. Selfish. Not sharing either the ball or the microphone, but jokes aside, Theo, Terrence is one of my best friends. We're gonna do this in English, obviously. Terrence is one of my best friends, if not the best friends. We play together.
You certainly make my top five. You make my top five. So yeah, go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
We played together in Boros 2012-2013. It was a hell of a season. I mean, in the beginning, I hated you. I hated you from the bottom of my heart. But like, the time went by, and we just got closer and closer. And now we're worldwide connected, that's why I wanted you to be a guest. And also, I wanted you to be a guest because you have like a lot of great stories. Your basketball career was.
Journey.
Turbulence.
Yeah. Turbulence. It wasn't a basketball career. It was more of a basketball journey.
Journey.
With a lot of ebbs and flows. A lot of ups and downs. No, it's we've talked about it at length, and I'm sure me and you are going to repeat some of these stories, but I could serve as a cautionary tale to some, especially young Swedish players. And there's talent in Sweden's becoming better and better. You look at, you know, around the country, especially the young man coming up now, Elliot Kudoe, who I've seen in person several times, a very good player who's not only one of the best young players here in Sweden, but he's ranked as one of the best young players in the States as well. Very gifted point guard, extremely quick. And then Pelle Larsson, who plays at Arizona after transferring from Utah. These are two guys that just shows the readily made evidence of how Swedish basketball is improving. And that's not even talking about the big 7-footer, William Berg, going to Purdue. So there's more and more players kind of making their way. And while I did have some success, I had a small amount of success, and I was able to play for a long time, there's also things that I did wrong and I did without getting the full scope of, you know, all the information. Now, the information wasn't as available at that point in time, but at the same time, I dove in without getting all my facts straight. And maybe this could serve as, you know, a cautionary tale as to why. You know, say Pelle Larsson gets an opportunity at X spot or something like that. Make sure he gets all of his information. Make sure if he enjoys college, enjoy college for the time being, and things of that nature. So it's good that Swedish basketball is getting better. And I'm going to pass it back, Nick. Just take the time. I'm in an isolation situation right now. So, but no, I mean the talent in Sweden's getting a lot better, obviously, and it's still growing, but. You know, there have been a lot of ups and downs, but I've been appreciative, and obviously our friendship has lasted a long time, but hoop is hoop, and hoop brings people together and things of that nature. So I'm happy to be on the show with you, and we can talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about.
So the reason Terrence knows a lot about the college basketball and Swedish college basketball players is because he's a basketball analyst nowadays. That's his new career, and he's really good at it. That's my humble opinion. I'm not saying it because
you're not saying it because I'm humble.
Yeah, but no, but that's the thing. Like I always told you like it was. Like when you played, I told you you're taking a lot of dumb shots.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did say that because you were taking a lot of dumb shots. I'm just honest with you. And like,
percentages were immaculate.
And as it's the same thing now. I'm going to be honest with you. You're good at your job.
Well, thank you.
But you had a really, really strange career.
Yeah.
We can talk about your career because you come from Tennessee and you played on a really good college that's called Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
And you're
a lot of people who know the American football team Clemson.
Yeah,
basketball is also fairly big there. And at the time that I was there, Clemson football was down. And so basketball was the main show on campus. So there was a lot of good energy. We had several top 10 games where we were number 9 in the country and Duke was number 3. And we played them at home and beat them 25 points. So I've had some success there. But I love college basketball. I'm not such a fan of the NBA as I used to be. And another thing is, one of the reasons I'm doing college basketball is because since I've done it, I feel like I can bring a little bit more credibility. If I were going to do the NBA, it'd be a little bit different because I didn't play. And I don't want to sell a bill of goods and say, you know, this guy should be this guy should be that, when I was never able to do it myself. And college allows me to be a part of the game still. I've coached for a little while, but doing the media thing has allowed me to stay around the game and, you know, enjoy what I'm doing. A lot like what you're doing, just I'm on a smaller level. You're doing national team stuff, and I'm running around doing college games, but it's a lot of fun. It's a good way to stay around it.
So for people that don't understand, Terrence played on a really good really good college team, yeah. Like a team that a lot of people said was going to go to the Final Four, and you had the Casey Rivers,
who's had a long career.
Yeah, he's still playing in Europe.
And he's old now. Shit.
He's like 33.
I'm 34. Casey's 2 years older than me.
Oh, he's older than
me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then you had the NBA dude,
Trevor Booker.
So it was a great team, and then you averaged 13 points per game your second season, and you were one of the best shooters in the nation, and like, that's where your career takes a really weird turn. Can you explain why? So it was second season, you're in ACC playing against Duke, North Carolina, 13 points per game. Like, that's stats for an NBA prospect, but you weren't really an NBA prospect. No. But what happened there?
Well, no, there was a lot of things that kind of went into it, and the game hadn't quite changed like it is now. If you look now, you know, Steph Curry split the game on its head. Now we're, you know, you talk about the NBA draft that just happened. It's a lot of 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", big switchable players that can do a lot of things. Well, 15 years ago, they were still specialists. You had your big guy on the block. You had Steve Kerr out on the wing. My goal was going after my sophomore year, and I can rewind even further. My freshman year, I was an all-freshman team member. The other five guys that were ahead of me on that list all played in the NBA for a long time, made a lot of money. They're a lot richer than I am. Jeff Teague, who else was on that team?
Al-Farouq Aminu.
Like, some really talented guys that played for a long time, and I was sixth on that list. And my whole idea was, hey, after my sophomore season, I had another good year. I was top in the ACC in three-pointers made, second in three-point percentage, yada, yada, yada. But I knew I was small. And at the college level, I was having to play the shooting guard position. And it ended up where I played my entire career mostly. I'd spotlight at the point guard, but most of the time I'd be at the two guard position. My idea was, I need to go to Europe. I can work on being a point guard, and then I'll Steve Kerr in the NBA. Maybe I'll be able to get into a good situation and play beside a LeBron James to where I can spread the floor. Because in my mind, that made sense. And a lot of people, and I was talking to, that made a lot of sense. The agents that I was talking to, it made a lot of sense because at that time I was pretty well regarded because I was scoring so much. And I always played better when the games were close. So it made sense in our head. I go to Europe, come back. Brandon Jennings had just done it. Nick Calathes was kind of talking about coming over from Florida. He did it. I did it. And it was something that was kind of in vogue at the moment. And I go over the sign in Naples. And
you have to tell this. So Terrence has like unlimited amount of crazy-ass stories. So Terrence comes from the U.S., from college basketball, averaging a lot of points for that
14,
level.
Right around 14. Right,
and like 14. He thinks he's going to be the shit and make a lot of money. And what happens in Italy?
Well, I signed a pretty nice contract in Italy, and I'm very happy about it. There were some good players on that team. There was a guy, Dragiša Drobnjak, who,
yeah,
you
from
know.
Slovenia, yeah.
Yeah, super. He's actually on staff for Slovenia, for the national team. So do me a favor, if you see him.
I will.
Tell him Terrence Oglesby said hello, and I miss him. He's a sweetheart of a human being. But I went over there. So Draleg, what we called him, was on a team. J.R. Reynolds was a good player. Kevin Kruger, who's now the head coach at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV. And some of these other guys. I mean, it was a talent. It was a pretty good bottom quarter, bottom third team in that top league. And the coach didn't love me. He was trying to make his way back into the top league. So he wanted an older veteran group that he could squeak out, you know, 12, 15 wins, stay in the league. So they, you know, avoid demotion. Well, he treated me like absolute dog shit, ran the hell out of me, worked me out 2-3 times a day, cussed me, talked about my mother, all this. And, there was actually one time I got over there and after he said something, I tried to tap him on the back. I'm like, I'll try to get it. Because I'm a people pleaser. Nick, how long you known me? Like, yeah. I like people. And he smacks my hand away. He said, don't you ever fucking touch me. So I was like, well, shit. Wait, my bad. I kind of walked off. We went to dinner that night, and a couple of the guys go, you didn't get with one of his family members, did you? I was like, no, I don't know what this is all about. Going to find out he'd been trying to move me for a while, which was fine. But we were trying to stay put and so I could find a team before I'd have to come back home and then go back, and then you avoid the flight costs. So, you know, keep in mind I'm 20 years old when this has happened.
Yeah, you were a kid.
And I was there for 2 months, and you know, I can't remember what it was a month. It was $8,000, $10,000 a month, US. And that's the first contract coming over. So I go over there, they hand me a bank receipt, and they're like, here, take this to the bank. You can go get your money. Yada, yada, yada. So I was like, well, okay, shit. I know I'm about to leave. I'm going to go get this money. I'm going to put it in my pocket. And then we're going to get out of here. So I go to the bank. And the people at the bank, you know, they're Italian people. I don't speak a lick of Italian. They don't,
Italian. Yeah, tell us how they speak. Speak. What is this?
Yeah, what is this? I hand them the receipt. I was like, hey, I would like to take this out in cash. I'm about to go home. And they go, no, 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 no. That's all I heard. No, 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 no. The lady who's behind the counter, she gets up, she walks back to the back. The other guy comes back and gets me, said, you come. Makes me walk to the back. And he goes, what is this? They thought I was trying to get over on. This was not a real check. So I never get a dollar of money after being there for 2 months, 110 degrees.
And not a dollar.
Not a dollar. Okay. They gave me a bunch of good meals because we ate.
Pasta.
Yeah, it was a lot of pasta. It was delicious.
You didn't get $1 for 2 months.
One single dollar.
What a great start of a basketball career of Tyrese Ogunbowale.
So then I do all that. We get home. My agent wouldn't get me out. Nobody's getting paid. We realize this. So JR gets out. Kevin gets out. There was a big Finnish guy, 6'10", really athletic guy. I can't remember his name. He gets out. They bring in Robert Tractor Trailer, played at Michigan. They bring in Travis Best. They bring in Damon Jones. They don't pay them either.
Did Damon Jones and Travis Best play for that team?
Right after I left, they signed both of them.
Okay.
They both get over there, and a week before the season starts, they still haven't gotten any money, and they go to play Benetton Treviso, and Damon Jones and Travis Best don't get on the bus. Mm-hmm. They don't get on the bus. So they actually played their under 18, and if you go back and look at the score in 2009, Napoli against Benetton Treviso, they beat them by 100 points and didn't even bring their top team.
Yeah.
So all that being said, the GM disappears. People still don't know where he's at. He disappears. But after that stuff happened, the GM disappears. Nobody's found him. He moved on the other side of the planet, apparently, because nobody can locate this individual. So he's still missing. But what a disastrous start that was. Meanwhile, I come home, season starting. Before I get my job in the Ukraine, which was next, Clemson's off to an 8-0 start. So not only do I not get a dollar, I'm living in a different place. I haven't finished my education. And I'm sitting here cringing because I should be playing somewhere. But because I was too anxious and couldn't get enough information, that's what happens.
So that's a terrible start to your
horrible,
promising career.
Yeah.
And then you moved to Ukraine, and Ukraine was... you played in...
Started out great.
Yeah, in Nikolaev, you told me you were getting paid pretty good.
Yeah.
But you told me once you had a bus ride, 14 hours, played a game, and then a bus ride back home.
Yeah, that season, when I finally got there, started out great. So the first game I'm there, I have two practices. I actually walk in when they're having a game, and they're playing against Patrick Sparks, a team from, I think it was Mariupol.
Mariupol, okay.
And I come in and they're finishing the second half of the game, so I kind of get to watch, and I'm sitting here watching. I was like, damn, these dudes are slow. I'm going to freaking score all day. Well, I go in practice. We have a game 2 days later. Practice twice, go into the game, they bring me off the bench, and I have 34 points in my first professional game. My first official professional game, I go for 34. I get up, I go to practice the next day. Everything's fine. We're setting up for our next game. Well, it was an election year there in Ukraine, and swine flu had kind of become a thing. So I go there. I have a great first game. I'm getting some momentum. The team likes me. They're excited. The entire country's quarantined because of swine flu, so you couldn't leave the city that you were currently in. And old T.O. had to sit in practice for 4 weeks against the same guys over and over and over, and we couldn't leave anywhere. So, long story short, the team that I just went for 34 on hired four new Americans, and all they did was watch film of me going nuts, and they come back, and we go and play at Odessa, and that was just about what you would imagine. Really, really tough. So, I was pretty much, what's the law? What can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
Yeah, Murphy's Law. That was pretty much it to start. But that, I mean, you know, there were some other things that happened pretty well. You know, we would get on, we'd play a cup game in Kiev. Well, at the time, there was no interstate system to where we couldn't drive. You're taking back roads in Ukraine.
And no highway.
No highways. Yeah. So everywhere you go, there's potholes everywhere.
Sounds like Serbia, too.
Yeah, so you would go from Mykolaiv, which is on the south,
yeah.
Like the southernmost point in Ukraine. You'd have to drive, you know, 12, 13 hours north to Kiev to play a game. Well, it was a cup game. It wasn't a regular season game, so the team didn't really care if we won or lost. We get in the morning, I want to say it was 5 or 6, we get on the bus. We take the bus all day. We stop a couple of times to eat, yada, yada, yada. We didn't eat breakfast, but we went, ate lunch. It was chickens or pork schnitzel and noodles.
That's crazy that you remember that, but go on.
Yeah, it's pork schnitzel and noodles. I remember because there was no taste. We get back on the bus. We keep going. And we get back on the bus. We keep going. We stop for pregame meal about 4. We get off the bus. We go and eat chicken or pork schnitzel and noodles again. We get back on the bus, we drive. So now we've driven or eaten for the past 14 hours before game time. We get off the bus 20 minutes before tip off, stretch, lay up lines, play the game. I played great. I think I had like 16 and 7 and maybe 3 rebounds because, you know, I don't rebound.
7 assists?
Yeah. Because I was playing well. I played with Edgar Giramanos and he was hurt. He was hurt. So
T.O. with 7 assists.
I'm not going to talk about the turnovers, but I'm talking about the assists right now. But I had a really good game. And we got back on, drove straight the fuck home, stopped once on the way home. You know what we ate? Pork schnitzel and noodles.
Oh, that's...
All 3 meals. So I was sick of that shit by the time we left. We finally get home. So we had played a game and been in... We had played one game and been in the car for about 28 hours. And it was long. And it was there was a couple of times... Like, we would hit potholes, and they would be so deep that the whole bus, it was like you're on a boat.
Yeah.
It was like you're on a boat. And my favorite part about that trip was, on the way home, because we won that game, the coaches busted out the vodka bottle and game film from one of the assistants from, like, 1982. And every time they scored, it was like he scored in live. And our coaches got drilled because the dude went for, like, 30 or 40. So every time he'd score, they'd take a shot. And they were smoking on the inside of the bus. So, like, they were smoking on the inside of the bus. They're drinking like fucking madmen. They're still happy with me because this is still a fairly early portion. And, like, so our coaches are hammered, cheering on, smoking inside. Windows are shut because it's so cold. And I'm sitting here still 20 years old, like, what the fuck is going on with my life right now? Sitting here watching what's going on. Like, I didn't know. I'm single. I'm young. Yeah, I'm excited. All I want to do is work. And
Thought you were going to play basketball and get paid. And what happened is you're getting fired, eating pork schnitzel and noodles, and people smoking inside of the bus.
Yeah.
So it was a cultural shock.
Yeah. Well, and that's coming from like, when you play at Arizona like Pele, or you play at Clemson like I did, you know you're chartering flights, like you're taking private planes with the team. to get to these places. You're staying at the Ritz-Carlton because there's a lot of money in college athletics. So like that made it really, really
reality
It was a reality check one, and it changed things. It changed the way you look at it. And what ended up happening in Ukraine was I was there for a while, and you know the team didn't do so well. They were spending more money than they were comfortable with on some guys, and so they cut everybody that wasn't Ukrainian.
Yeah, so what happened is you went to Spain for 1.5 season, and then you come to Sweden and you play for Sundsvall, Örebro, and Borås, your first time in Sweden.
Yeah,
and you know,
but I played 2 years in Spain. Did you just say that?
Yes.
Yeah,
sorry. 1.5, right?
That's yeah, what 1.5 with the same team in Spain, and it was up and down as well.
Yeah, Tarragona.
Yeah, it's Tarragona.
Anyways, you come to Sweden, and like from Sweden, you obviously have a bunch of stories. You played for Sundsvall on a short-term contract because Pavel Ermolinski was injured?
No. It was Johan Pierre.
Johan Pierre was injured, okay.
So they took me in for Johan, and I love Johan. He's salt of the earth, dude. But he got injured. I think he hurt his knee or his back. I don't know. There was always some hurt. And he sat out for 2 to 3 months. And I came in and played. And I Peter is a great human. We didn't necessarily mesh as far as what he wanted to do on the playing style and what I was capable of doing.
Yeah.
Because what Peter's best teams, and they're still like this, it's not like he's changed much, like big switchable guys. Like he was ahead of this curve, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Where it was like, hey, I'm going to go big. I'm going to switch everything. And then if a guard gets stuck on a big, we're just going to figure it out. That's what the NBA is doing now. But that's what Peter was doing light, you know, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So, like, who was the guy that played? Alex Westby. Perfect example.
Yeah,
he's 6'5", 6'6", guards everybody.
Leonard Barrington.
Leonard Barrington, tough as shit, about 6'5".
Plays defense on everyone.
That's right. And then he has a couple of guys that can really score it. Well, if I get stuck in a post, like, I don't know what the hell to do. I've never played the post. So, I would get stuck, and then I had a hard time guarding. The way
you always have a hard time guarding.
Yeah, that's true. But you're right. But at the same time, like, if we don't switch, and I'm on a guy where, one, I know where I'm going to have to go. I know I'm going to have to switch over to, or get over top of screen, stuff like that. I can play system defense. I'm not a great individual defender. Well, in his system, there was help situations, sure, but they were less likely to get over there to help. I'm a good off-ball defender. I know where to be. When it came to guarding the ball, I wasn't great. I realize that. And I never have been. I probably never will be. Or, like, even in the over 40 league, I probably won't be. But, like, position-wise, I know where I'm supposed to be. The help situations there weren't great. And because of that, I wasn't. Very good for him.
So you were there for a couple of months, and then you go to Örebro. That was 0-24. And your first game, you destroyed us, Borås, and you win 3 in a row, right?
Yeah, so that team was 0-24.
0-24, yeah.
0-24. And I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I came in here and I was this guy or whatever, because they had good players. It's just they didn't have
a go-to solid players, actually.
They didn't have a go-to score, like, Andrew Plague was creeping towards the end of his career a little bit. He was, you know, he wasn't as fast as he was. Bernard Toombs was super athletic.
Darius Santee. Darius Santee was another.
No, that was a year after. It was
Demond Watts.
Demond Watts.
That's a good team.
It was a really good player.
That's a solid team.
Brandon Barton, who was a really good defender. Everybody knows who Brandon Barton is, that beautiful dude who's supposed to be on, what is it, Sex Island or whatever the hell it is that happens here in Sweden. What kind of TV shows you guys watch? I don't fucking know. But, like, he's by the way, I love Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon's a great guy.
Like he's a supermodel. I don't know what that is, just supermodel. but now, in a really fun team, like, great guys. But we got there, and they had everything except for a score. Pierre Hampton played when he wanted to, which I'm not sure if that's changed or not, but he just played when he wanted to.
He plays a lot now.
Yeah, so he played. At that time, he was a little young, a little immature. It sounds like from, you know, talking to you during the season that he's changed, but he was a little young, a little immature. Brandon Barton was a good player. Plake. Once you got Plake's juices going, he was great.
Yeah.
But what an awesome dude. Bernard Toombs was an excellent athlete. Wasn't very skilled, but a very good athlete.
It was a solid team.
And but they didn't have a go-to score. Like, who there is going to score 20 points on a given night? They didn't have
one. But 0-24. It's fucking crazy. Anyways, Tio, you come in. I want to talk about two things. Please tell everyone when you play the away game, and now you're not even pork schnitzel and noodles. You were eating a Chex bar.
Yeah, it was a Kex bar.
Kex bar. So
this is after we'd won three in a row.
Okay, so we won three in a row. And what happened?
No, so all right. So I play. You said we could go 2 hours, whatever. So sorry, I know I can drag along, but we. My wife is killing. We went two or three in a row. I can't remember what it was, and we have to go play in Solna. Solna's not an easy place to play. They had, Leslie Myrtle and some of these guys. And, we're ready to go. And it's a 4-hour, 5-hour bus ride. I can't remember how long. But I was like, for sure we're going to stop and have a pregame meal. For sure. And we stopped off at a gas station, and they got a box of Kex bars. And they just kind of tossed them to us. We're like, you ready to play?
I was pre-game meal.
Pre-game
Kex
meal.
Bar.
pre-game meal. A couple of Kex bars. And it's basically chocolate covered cardboard before the game. That's basically what happened. And then after we got to stop at Max, because that was a real luxury. But we ended up getting shit kicked, and we were all malnourished.
So you go from charter flights from Clemson to eating a Kex bar
at the Ritz-Carlton and having food catered to eating a Kex bar on the road. Playing for Örebro.
That's a Shakespeare club.
Yeah. At that point, we were 3-24 because we had won three in a row. So I was like, "Hey, we got some momentum, man. We're gonna get some pregame meal." No sir, no you Kex bar.
And there's another story I want to bring up. And remember, this podcast is raw. We're not cutting. So beware of what you're saying. But you told me when you were in Örebro, somebody approached you. We're not gonna say if it's a coach or a player or a referee or a fan. Or somebody that's doing the stats. But somebody did approach you, ask you if you guys could lose or win by more than 20. What happens? Say no names.
I don't remember that.
Oh!
No, I'm serious. I don't remember. I would tell you. For 100%.
We've talked about this gazillion times. Okay. Tio doesn't want to talk about this.
You have the name. Can you mouth the name to me real quick?
No, we're okay. I'll write you. I'll write you the name.
Yeah. Okay.
No, don't say anything.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah, but let's not talk about it. Let's not.
Yeah,
talk about
I do
it.
Remember.
Yeah, you do remember that, but we'll skip.
It. Yeah, let's skip that one because there's been enough trouble.
There's been enough trouble.
So I would rather not. Enough trouble.
Okay, let's go. So you come to Bros and it was me, you, and JJ Miller. I was number one, JJ was number two, you were number three, and we were just destroying everybody.
Yeah, that's
how I remember it.
I was just happy to get some minutes behind you two legends. I was just happy to get some minutes.
But anyways, you came here and we were just scoring a lot of points. I remember we led the world in scoring.
I'm not changing. I'm not changing my fucking story.
Yeah, but there's like these Philippines leagues. They average like gazillion points per game.
Yeah, but those are the sub-6-4 leagues. They have sub-6-4 leagues. Did you know that?
Yeah, no, I know. I've heard. They allow to have like one dude that's more.
Yeah, you can have one dude that's taller than 195 centimeters.
Anyways, we scored a lot of points. We didn't play no defense. Like, I'll never forget that. That's the only team I ever played in that our defensive tactics were we hope that the other team miss.
Yeah.
We were so bad in defense. So imagine, it was you, it was JJ Miller, Mike Palm plays no defense. Hanky Carlson was getting older. Frederick Anderson was young.
But Hanky wasn't. He wasn't.
He was not a good defender.
Yeah, he wasn't.
And then we had dudes like Matthias Jörnsson that was a really good defender. And then Chris was playing, he would take a steal and dunk. And like people would think, oh, they're playing defense. But like I've never seen a team that is so checked out to play defense. Ever. No. There's Yuri Gordon, 2019. That's the worst defensive team I've ever seen. But like Bros is up there.
Let me ask you this. What was our record this year, Nick? We had this conversation. We For those who don't know, me and Nick have been playing pickup basketball outside on the concrete. He is getting irritated at my defensive rotations while playing 4-on-4 outside of an elementary school. So, like, let's keep it in perspective. What was our record this year? What were we doing that year? 24-10, 23-11?
We started off really good, and then during the end, we kind of cooled off. And then I think we were fifth spot, and then we played Norrköping. Or that was fourth in the quarterfinals.
I think we were fourth in Norrköping because they started slow.
But they had the home court advantage, though. Remember, they won 3-1, and like, anyways,
they won 3-1, but they finished the game here.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they had the home court advantage. The last game would have been on their. Okay. Yeah, we were five. They were four, and you know, it is what it is. They beat us.
If I remember correctly, that the league that year had five teams that were really close.
It was really good.
It was like, a really good
2012, league. 2013, in my opinion, is the best year of Basket League. And
most talent,
because a lot of dudes went to play in a good, really good leagues after that. If you remember, like, Solna was fucking loaded.
Yeah,
they had Rupe Ahonen, Mats Levin. They had this Calvin Thomas. What's his name? Calvin something that played in Greece League. The big Greek guy, the center. You remember him?
Yeah, he was good.
Like, they had a really good team. So, but anyways, we kind of flamed out, and then your career takes even weirder path.
Yeah,
you go to France, like maybe second or third league.
Yeah, that was after Jonas brought me into his office and asked me if I'd like to return, and I was told by my agent at the time, another bad agency decision, that hey, I'm going to be able to get you in the Bundesliga because I averaged 18 points a game, shot pretty good percentages. And all of this, and I was told, well, you're going to be able to get the Blues. Like, well, what happens? NBA strike happens that year. So what happens? 15, 20, 30, something odd NBA players decide, hey, I'm going to go to Europe and just fill the time, right? So you don't think like that's a lot, but there's a pretty big trickle-down effect because the guys that are signing at Bayern Munich are now signing at the next level down, and guys are signing at the next level down. So there's a pretty heavy trickle-down. And so that ends up not working out after I had, basically thrown all my eggs into one basket. So I end up going to France, playing a third league team. The team I go to is
0-24.
No, one and 17.
1-17. You always play for trash teams.
Yeah, but the thing was like after the seasons were over, like that last year, those last 16 games with that team, we went 8-8. So, like, you telling me that wasn't a significant improvement? They went 8-8. We won some games. And then the next year, I have a hard time getting a job because, well, he's doing all this on a losing team. Well, yeah. Not if you take a deep dive on it.
Yeah.
And
But let's keep France because it's not as fun as Georgia. You go to Georgia, and please, Terrence, I know we talk.
I have some good France stories, too.
But we go to Georgia.
Yeah. Georgia was great.
Georgia was not great.
Georgia was great.
Georgia, because the rat story is my favorite story of all. And I know we talked about it on your pods, but you please, it's so funny.
I haven't told this in a long time, so I might skip a thing or two. But we're living in you know what this is. We're living in Eastern Bloc housing, like just block housing. Like
yeah.
It's just, you basically live like ants. One block of apartments, yeah. The next one of apartments, the next one. It's just basically 2 or 3 kilometers worth of these just big brick houses that they just put up, and they're ugly as all shit, and they haven't been maintained and all that stuff. I need to pause 1 second so we can't do this. We can't pause, but my wife is going nuts.
Yeah, you can go and talk outside. So yeah. I'll fill it.
Yeah, I'm going to let you fill it, but
yeah,
my wife
is
driving.
I'm going to tell the story from my perspective.
I'll be right back.
So my bro, T.O., he went on to play in Georgia. The thing is, there were those huge it's so funny. There was the rats over there in Georgia were so big, and there were rats chilling outside of his building that they weren't scared of him. He would call me and he would be like, these rats, these motherfucking rats are not even.
No. So, all right, so let me get back to this. Sorry, my wife is going to kill me. For even picking the phone up while we're on the show. But no, so I would go to, we would go to practice. I had to have somebody pick me up because driving in Georgia is awesome. I mean, there were roads, but they were just suggestions. So, like, people would be driving all over the place, so they wouldn't give us a car there. So I would go, you know, you would hear in the, you like, we would go to bed at night, and there was a hollow spot in between the walls. We were on the second floor, so the rats would get up there. So we would just hear them. We would just hear these rats. My wife would get all scared and everything. And so the next day, I walk out, and it's hot too. I think that's something to keep in perspective. It's really warm. And we go outside and it smells because all the garbage comes to the bottom and people just throw it in there and the garbage hasn't been picked up and God knows how long. And long story short, the big ass rats, and I'm not talking little Swedish rats, I'm talking giant gopher rats that have been mutated from God knows what. These are the biggest rats I've ever seen. My Uncle Jimmy calls them gopher rats, big gopher rats. And I would walk up and I was taught when I was growing up, like when you walk, just stomp your feet and then animals will scatter. Like just stomp your feet. You go through the woods, stomp your feet, clap your hands, everything will scatter. Snakes in particular. No, these rats didn't give a shit. They looked me up and down like I was some kind of chump. I just said, I was just straight up looked me up and down. So I walked up. It scared me because they didn't move.
They were the one controlling the area.
That was their territory and I was infringing upon their area.
They wouldn't move.
They wouldn't move. I was infringing upon what they were doing. So I skip my ass around it and I go and catch my ride. I was like, guys, these rats, man, they didn't give a shit. He goes, yeah, he goes, this is Georgia. This is Georgia.
And so I was like, Huge okay. Georgia rats are they're
Massive
like
Georgia. They were bigger than
they're
horses in my
special.
mind.
They're like they're you know they're those rats, you know, they're the
Those
rats.
are the, those are them dudes. Those rats were
They
them.
control the area. They didn't give
Most
a fuck.
those are most gangster fucking rats I've ever seen in my life. And yeah, so I walk past. It scares me. I walk. I come back, and this old lady has ripped a chair leg off of one of these broken chairs, and she's beating these rats in the heads and killing them. She
Wait,
killed,
what?
she took these. She took chair. She took the chair leg off of a broken chair and smacked these rats and were killing them. She killed two of them.
That's
The other one
insane.
scattered. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. This lady had to be in
You
her,
never told me this.
she had to be in her 70s. She's smacking, she's killing these rats, just not intimidated whatsoever. Rats are fighting back. She's like a goddamn princess, just fighting off and all that. She's like
I don't know if I
Xena
believe
warrior
this.
princess. No, this is true. So she comes back. No, I'm not done. She comes back and she's smacking these things in the head and killing them. This woman is so much tougher than me. So I walk inside. I realize these rats are dead, and I come back out, and these kids have picked up these rats and they're playing with them like airplanes.
Oh yeah, I remember. No, now I remember. Did you
That's
tell me
why how they
this?
died. So this
Yeah.
lady's beating these things in the head, and these rats are dead, and these kids. I walk out, and
Yeah, I
I
remember
was
you
like,
telling me
Jesus,
it's horrible.
this is not, less than sanitary.
I remember you.
I was MVP of the league that day.
You were not MVP of the league.
I
What are
was.
you
Of
talking
the cup, I
about?
was.
Of the cup and the league is two different things.
No, but the cup is like it's a season in its season.
I
It's
know,
an
but
overall
you
thing.
can't say you were the MVP of the league. See, you were the MVP of the cup.
Is the cup not played by the league?
No, but there's a difference in Europe.
Well, I'm confused then. Because I was MVP of the cup then.
You were. I remember that.
But the cup is a season long thing. So, okay,
No, it's
so
not. Yeah, it is. In maybe Georgia. Like a
I
lot of
appreciate
countries.
this, Nick. Like, I'm just going to start making shit up, and then you can just tell me it's all false.
Yeah, because
I got the thing. It's in my on my desk whenever I do
I
shows
know
at
you were
home.
the MVP. I remember that, but it was MVP
MVP.
of the cup, not MVP of the league. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's two different competitions.
Huh? Why
Huh.
are they different competitions?
It's a European thing. Anyways,
Dumb.
and then you should. I remember when you sent me a picture of a locker room in Georgia.
Yeah.
Like people, if I can find that picture, like people wouldn't believe it. Why?
It's on
How?
my Instagram.
I can't believe like human beings are allowed to be in. But then again, it shows like the contrast of, you know, playing maybe in Sweden
Yeah.
when you have like real locker rooms, nothing flashy,
No, nothing flashy, but
but it's
clean.
clean.
It's
Yeah, it's
clean.
clean. And then like it looked like some. I it looked like somebody bombed it.
I think somebody did. But here's another thing too is the smells, because the toilets were right when you walked in, and they were the hole in the floor toilets, which, you know, you play here, there, everywhere, it's fine. But they were hole in the floor. Well, people were missing, Well, they didn't clean them, and they didn't have proper sterilization. So, like, a big part of the problem was the smell. Like, I played there for 5 or 6 months, and to the last day that I left, I couldn't get used to walking into that smell.
Yeah.
Like, every day I would have to cough 3 or 4 times to avoid from throwing up when I walked in. The smell was so bad. And the bad part was, you know, I would have to bring some clothes so I could shower there because our water would cut off, you know, 4, 5, 6 days at a time. So that made it difficult as well. Yeah, it was just it was a different place. One of the reasons I wanted to do that is because I felt like in my mind I didn't do very well in Ukraine the first time. So I knew it would be a similar situation living-wise and travel-wise and culture-wise. I mean, it's not the exact same, but there are some similarities. That's the reason I went to Georgia, and I actually played really well. I was MVP of the Cup. All jokes aside, I was MVP of the Cup, and you know, I had a really good year and ended up in the G League after that.
Yeah, so the G League, like, we can maybe straightforward the last part of your career because we already been talking for 40 minutes. Time flies by when you have fun, Terrence.
You told me this either goes 20 minutes or 2 hours. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but
I attacked this
with
like
this
we were
tempo.
Gonna be able to
with
talk.
This tempo, it's going to be 3 hours. This is not a Joe Rogan podcast, like 3 or 4 hours. We have to keep it to 2.
What are you how are we going to keep it at 2? We're going to talk about other stuff?
We're not just going to talk about your fabulous career. We're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff.
That makes sense.
What I was trying to say is you played in the G League and you maybe felt like, okay, this is my last shot to show myself for NBA teams. I remember you telling me, I'm probably not going to get a shot, but you know, I have to do this. And then I'll never forget you playing against... Like, G League is good. Hardaway was playing there. Hardaway Jr. was playing. Yeah. Can you imagine him? Like, he has made so much money. He was so bad for a while that he didn't have a spot on an NBA team. And there were a lot of...
Well, he was still in his second or third year.
Yeah, it was like his third year or something like that. But how did you stack up against these, like, crazy talented dudes? Because G League has a lot of crazy talented dudes.
I competed well. Now the only thing was
you scored like 22 points one game. I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't shoot very well. It was a very difficult place to be a part of because one is the league is very athletic, skill wise. It's starting to turn into what the minor leagues are in the States. The NBA is doing a great job of making it available for younger players to develop. Now there's more guys that are, you know, used on two-way contracts and you know all these you know prop whatever the whatever they're called, contracts, to where they're actually using the G League to the advantage of all these young player stuff. Then it was starting to get to that, but it was just so athletic and so big. And while I competed well, I just didn't shoot well enough to get it on. And one of the hardest parts about it was we had a guy named Russ Smith, who was a high-level scorer. He's playing in China now, averaging 48 points a game or something stupid. But the hard part for somebody like me was because I was undersized, like, every bit of my preparation needed to be really good for me to be good. And there would be times where I would think I was going to play because we didn't have any send downs from the Grizzlies. I was thinking I was going to play. And then 30 minutes before tip off, Russ Smith and a couple of other guys would just show up and then I wouldn't play that night. So meanwhile, I waste that day because I can't work out, right? I waste that day because I can't work out. And so I get nothing out of it. Or I work out really hard in the morning because I don't think I'm going to play. And then those guys get called up for a game up in Minnesota the next day. So then I've just absolutely drained myself and I go into the game tired and having to compete against these high level athletes because I am what I am. I'm 188 centimeters. I'm heavy. So like I have to really
T-Rex prepare. Arms.
Yeah. T-Rex arms. I got T-Rex arms, like standing reach, 7'8", no big deal, but like it's difficult. And for somebody who's undersized like that, I have to really be prepared. Well, the G League completely took that out. And not making excuses, I just wasn't good enough then. And I just didn't hit shots like I should have.
Yeah, so your last season, you come back to Sweden to play Umeå. We don't need to get in because it was...
I have the whole list. Do you want to hear the whole
list?
Yeah,
I've seen the list. Please don't...
Don't do it?
Don't throw so many people under the bus. But what I'm trying to say, Terrence, is that... You had a really promising high school and college career, and then your career as a player didn't go as you wanted it to do. But you still have no regrets, right? That you always told me that you have no regrets.
I got a lot out of it, and I learned a lot. And one thing that I wasn't especially going in the early part, I was never very patient. And as I learned, when I came to Europe, there's a lot of crutches in the States. Like if you're good at something, there's a lot of crutches. Whenever I came to Europe, if I made a mistake or I said something, my mistakes were my own. And I couldn't blame it on anybody. They were my fault.
Yeah.
That was a big part for me. It also taught me a lot of patience, because when you're playing in Ukraine and guys are struggling to get words out, you can't just dismiss something. You have to let them work through it. And I have to try to find different words that guys understand. So patience helped me a lot. It changed me who I was. You got good mood talent. Like by the time I got to Burroughs, like I was still fiery and really competitive, but I was happy 98% of the time. I think you could attest to that.
Yeah, yeah, you're almost always happy.
I'm almost always
happy.
But
then when you get mad,
it takes a lot.
But then when you get mad, you're mad.
Yeah, it's still the same that way, but it takes a lot for me to get mad.
So that's your playing career. And like,
hold on one second. Hold on, you're always trying to cut me off. We only got 40 minutes. You told me 2 hours.
Now it's 50, brother.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
You talk all the time.
No, you talk all the time.
You're no, you talk all the time.
You cut you me talk off. I'm sitting here trying to. I'm sitting here trying to tell stories. I'm halfway through.
I've said like 120 words. You said like 12,000.
Well,
that's the ratio.
Well, here's the thing. Nick's corner gets his own corner for a second. Now, the second you got to share something, you get a little pissed off. No, but I met my wife. I have two great kids. I've made great friends. The lessons that I learned from being over here are just helping me infinitely back home and in my business endeavors and with college basketball stuff. All this stuff that I've learned and the friends that I've made, like it has set me up for the rest of my life. So while I never hit the top end of it, it's also at the same time, it's really kind of shaped and helped me in a positive way to, you know, be successful moving forward. And I've been successful so far ever since I retired from
playing. Yeah, so that's what I tried to say. Like, your playing career was over.
I knew what you were trying to say. But you don't want to pass the ball anymore, Nick.
You know, please stop. but you as an analyst, like, when you played, I used to tell you all the time, like, Terrence, you have to be a lot smarter. Because you were shooting the toughest shots in the history of
Swedish league. But do you remember what happened in Umeå when me and you talked?
Yeah, I remember. So this happened. When he played in Umeå his last season, he started off the season shooting pretty bad percentages. I was like, Terrence, can you please just try for 3 games? Only shoot wide open shots. And if you're not wide open, like distribute and do stuff. And then you shot like 45%.
It was higher. It was like a stupid number. Yeah. It was like a 65-ish.
But you averaged like maybe 10 points per game. 10
points a game. I shot 65% from three during those 3 games, of course.
And it was the same results.
Yeah, but we were getting – no, it wasn't the same results. We weren't losing by 5 or 10 points. We were losing by 35 points.
Yeah, yeah. And then we weren't even
getting a chance.
And then you called me and were like, Nick, I can't do this. I have to be me.
The point is to try to win. Like, and that was also a big, big problem with me. Because if you look at KC Rivers, for example, who was my college teammate, I used to get a little pissed because KC would be like, if he's 5 for 6 from three, he's shutting that whole situation.
He's not shooting,
he's not shooting anymore. So I'm 5 for 6 from three. I'll be damned if I only shoot 6. Because then I'm helping the team because I'm able to keep shooting. No, I could have been more selfish in my thinking. But at the same time, like for Umeå to compete that year, I had to be like that. But the thing is, I did it to the detriment of my own statistics.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, for you that are listening to this podcast, there are a lot of pro basketball players out in Europe, especially Americans, especially shooters, that are really thinking about their three-point percentage, and they only take good looks.
Yeah.
They're not trying to do too much, but when they get a good look, they shoot it, and it's a lot easier to get a new job if it says that you're shooting 41% from three than if you're shooting 36.
Yeah.
And a lot
big
of
payday difference.
And I played in Sweden with Americans that are like that too. Like, they would not take a super contested shot. They're always waited so they can get decent. But you were never one of those guys. And, you know, it was for your benefit because it made you a good player that got a really good college offer. You were a great college player. I mean,
Nick,
seriously.
I played as an import for 8 years in Europe. It's not like I was a bad European player. I could have been better.
Exactly.
But I kept getting jobs. Like, so it wasn't like I was a bad European player. You're making it sound like I'm fucking horrible. But like I had a solid
Yeah, you had a solid European career, but like
I just didn't get paid millions of dollars.
And you thought you were gone. Okay. So this is your playing, and now we're talking about analysts, because what I was trying to say, like, you as an analyst, I listen to your podcast, watch your videos on Twitter, whatever, listen to your games, I'll listen to a couple of games you've done. Like, there's actually...
On ESPN4.
On ESPN4. You have to download three apps to watch. Anyways...
Get a subscribe.
Like, there's a difference, because nowadays, you're so good at this job, there's nothing I can tell you.
No.
When you were playing, I could say, Terrence, you have to fucking play defense. Or Terrence, you need to, like, take just wide open shot. But, like, you're so good at this job. You're a great analyst. You're going to have a great career. You're already making moves, and you're on a big podcast that has a lot of viewers, a lot of listeners, excuse me, has 50, 60,000 followers on Twitter, your podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
The podcast you're part of. You're really making a great moves. So this brings me to this part. You mentioned it in the beginning, Swedish players in college or high school. So Elliot Kadó, you mentioned him, and he's like the big hope. And, you know, he's probably going to feel a lot of pressure. That's my opinion, because everybody in Swedish basketball counts on him being a really good player. Especially young basketball fans really adore him, and they all think he's going to make the NBA. I personally think it's going to be hard because he's super short for being a NBA point guard. You know what I mean? He's like, you told me he's maybe 5'11", 6".
With or without the hair?
With or without the hair. How tall is he?
5'10".
No, stop it. He's not 5'10". He's not, I've been, he's 5'11", or maybe 6". He's not 5'10". He's not as tall as me. Are you crazy? I'm 5'9". Stop it. He's 5'11". Anyways, so I think he's going to be a professional, but I think playing in the NBA is going to be really hard. You watched him play live. You went to watch him play because I told you about him.
Yeah.
And you evaluated him and all that. Can you tell us?
He's a good player, but he is on the small side. He doesn't have necessarily super long arms. He is explosive. And where he's played well has been in this Pangos All-America camp, where Pangos used to be a great camp. It used to be. It has fallen off some. But the thing is with Pangos, if you really look, like, the only thing that comes out of Pangos now are highlights. If you really look at those things deep, nobody's playing defense. Nobody's getting back. Nobody's passing the ball. So guys that, like Elliot Kadó, who are very good handling the ball, who are really, really quick, and he is really, really quick. He's not Rudy Mimba quick, but he's really quick. And for those who are listening that didn't get the privilege of watching Rudy Mimba play when he was 18 years old, like, holy shit. But he is very quick. He's a very good player. The concern is NBA guys of that size are just falling out. And people forget, like, Steph Curry's listed at 6'3". I bet he's a hair taller. Like these are big dudes. Even the guys that look small on television are big dudes. So, like, this whole narrative of, like, well, Steph Curry can do it, anybody can do it. No, Steph Curry's 6'3.5", 6'4". Like, exactly. No, it's not. This is not a game.
And you talked about Peter playing switching defense. Now everybody plays switching defense. Yeah.
He was ahead of the curve. Give Peter all the credit. Yeah. Like, he was really ahead of it. Like, you get a bunch of long guys that can guard, especially in this league. Like, Peter was way ahead of the curve. If you look at can I finish a sentence?
No, because now we're jumping back to Peter.
No, I like Peter. Okay. I think Peter does a great job.
Keep talking.
No, I'm kidding. You ruined it.
No, I just wanted to say, like, Elliot, if he's going to play in NBA, he needs to be Gary Payton level on-ball defender.
Muggsy Bogues
level, like, on-ball defender to, like, survive and, like, get a chance and minutes.
Yeah, and it's hard. The guy that I could compare him to right now is a guy who just got drafted for the Memphis Grizzlies named Kennedy Chandler.
Okay.
And I'm not sure he's as good as Kennedy. Kennedy's a high-level competitor. He's the number one point guard in the country for several years, and he's 5'11 with shoes on. Elliot's in that same range when it comes to his size. Both elite quickness. I think Elliot's going to be a plus shooter, but he's going to have to be. You know, the biggest thing that you hope for is he gets up to about 6'1", 6'2". I don't know that that's going to happen because he seems like he's developed not ahead of schedule, but he's getting there. So I think that's going to be interesting to see. He is a great athlete. He's explosive. He's bouncy. He can get above the rim.
You told me he controls the game. He controls on a high the level. Tempo.
He really does. He handles the ball well. He doesn't get rattled. He played really well against this team final that had Jalen Duren who just got drafted by he just got drafted by Charlotte and traded to New York and subsequently traded to Detroit, who's a big time athlete. Derek Lively, who's playing at Duke, was on that team. Corey Floyd plays at UConn, or played at UConn, just transferred to Providence. Like, played against a high level team, controlled the tempo, didn't get rattled, was 2 years younger than everybody else.
Okay.
So, like, for a young player to play with that much composure, show his quickness, defend at a reasonable level, it was really impressive to me. And I've seen him in person, what, two, maybe three games. And his poise is something that sticks out more than anything. Still explosive as he gets older and more assertive, because he's going to be playing with guys his own. He's going to have much better stats. The size is going to get him at the professional level, but he's going to be able to pick where he wants to play at the college level.
But you told me also that if you're a top 10 guy, Elliot Cadeau is ranked top 10, number one ranked point guard in the whole country.
2024, right? That's his high school class. He's 2024.
Yeah, 24, but he might reclassify. Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Shouldn't do that.
You told me that he shouldn't do that, and I understand why. But anyways, you told me that because he has this status and, you know, this ranking, he's always going to get shots at least.
Absolutely.
He's going to get opportunities. It depends on him taking them or not taking them.
But it's a resume builder. It's a resume builder. At this point, you're ranked top 15 in the country. You are the best point guard in your class as of today. Now, that could change because there could be a point guard pop up out of nowhere that's 6'4", 6'5", that nobody's found out about. That's what happened with John Wall.
Exactly.
Like, that stuff happens. But he's always going to get a shot as long as he maintains his level at the high school level, right? So, like, he's always going to be able to get, you know, Purdue to call or Kentucky to call somewhere like that. He's going to have his choice.
He has said that he would like to get a call for Kentucky.
They did call, didn't they?
They reached out to him. There's this date that you're not allowed to reach, and then
Junior called it.
Yeah, Junior called it. And when the Junior called it, they reached out to him. So
that's good.
And he has a lot of other college offers.
Of course.
I think even Kansas offered him a couple of days ago. So, I mean, he comes from a great family.
Yeah,
he comes from a great family, and everybody that I've talked to says he's a great young kid, and he's obviously super talented.
Well, his teammates seem to like him.
That's a big point.
Everybody seems to like him. I've never heard anybody say one bad word about it. So he's going to be interesting to follow. But what I want for people that are listening to this is to realize that the path to the NBA is so hard. There's maybe 40 humans per year that get a chance, because like those late second rounders, they don't even get a chance to play in the NBA. You know,
there's been a new stat come out, and it was Rob Doster on Field 68, my boss. He was talking about, I want to say 90% of players that get drafted in the second round over the last 4 years get at least a two-way contract. And two-way contracts are worth about $500,000.
Okay.
So it's changed a little bit because the NBA is now using the G League as
development,
development as a minor league feeder system. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. So, okay. And then we have another player that you watched and covered a lot. Pelle Larsson.
Yeah.
Pelle Larsson. Which he's one like one of my favorite players in Sweden overall. I really love his game because he's a typical Swedish dude, you know, but very on Swedish. Steroids.
Very Swedish.
Yeah, but you can tell the story about him being Swedish, but he's a great defender, really good athlete. He's not a great athlete, but he's a really good athlete on college level, and he's getting better like every year.
He's an average athlete. He's an average college.
He's a really good athlete in college.
He's an average.
Why would they take him in Arizona and give him if he's an average athlete, Terrence? Are you crazy?
I'm talking about compared to the rest of the Power Five. He's an average athlete.
No, you're comparing to the NBA. He's not.
No, Nick.
I've played against dudes that I played in Power Five. Like, they're not aliens. You played in the Power Five.
Yeah.
You have arms shorter than this microphone.
Yeah, but I had one special. I had one special trait, and I was shooting the ball.
Anyways, Pelle's good.
I did that. I did better than 99%.
How do you see him in the future? What's his career going to look like?
You know, he'll get a shot because he does a lot of small things well. The only problem is he doesn't take enough risk to really be great. That's an issue, and I mean that. I talked to his head coach at the Final Four, and I said, you know, Pelle, I've known about him for a long time and yada, yada, yada. And he said, man, I love Pelle. He said, the only problem is I got him. He's just so Scandinavian in his thinking and his approach to basketball because he's so calculated.
Yeah.
He said, in order for him to be the best he could be, I need him to let go. I'm not sure he's going to be able to do that. And it has a lot less to do with being Swedish.
Exactly.
It's just his individual personality.
No, it's about being, so this is the thing about Swedish basketball. Every Swedish basketballer in the world is a role player. It's crazy. And I think it has something to do with upbringing and how people look at how team sports should be played.
Yeah.
But like Jerebko, Taylor, Eriksson, everyone, Luda, everyone is a role player. There's never been one Swedish dude that goes in Europe and his roles is to take the ball and average a lot of points.
And get busy.
In a good league.
Yeah.
There's never been that dude.
The only dude with that mentality really was Mimba.
Yeah, he had the mentality, but he didn't have some other stuff that we don't need to talk about today. But
he had that mentality from a player perspective.
Yeah, and he did.
He had it. Rudy's career was not a result of Rudy's ability.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. Rudy had a lot of other things. But if he was able to get going, like, he would have played the NBA.
So how high do you think Pelé is going to come? What's his...
I think, you know, it's a thing where he's playing at Arizona. He's a key contributor. He doesn't turn the ball over. He didn't shoot it great this year, but I think that'll get better next because he shot it well at Utah.
Exactly.
You know, he only takes open ones. But for a team like Arizona that gets up and down a lot, he's going to have to get out of his comfort zone in order to make a splash. I don't know that he's going to be able to do that because Arizona keeps bringing in guys, high caliber guys. They had three guys drafted this year. I mean, Arizona's a factory.
Yeah.
So you have to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and kind of produce more than what he's been doing in order to get those necessary looks. Like it's very rare that a guy averages 6 points a game, three boards and an assist. And
those numbers need to get up. Dane and Terry averaged 8 points per game and like four rebounds or something.
Yeah,
like
but his ability to pass the ball and take risks. You'll notice in his scouting report some of these passes he's making, full court bounce passes with spin on them like crazy. They see the skill being represented there in the vision.
Okay.
Pelé doesn't make those risks to showcase his vision. It doesn't mean he doesn't see it.
He's a good passer.
That's the thing. It doesn't mean he doesn't see it. It means his risk reward is very low.
Okay.
So that's the big difference. Yeah, his risk reward's very low. Unless it's for certain, Pelé's not going to take that risk. And for him to get a shot at the next level, he's going to have to take some more risks and he's going to have to convert on those.
That's a really good analysis. I like that.
Thank
risk
you.
Reward.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Yeah. there's this another subject I want to talk about. It's this year's NBA draft, and Paolo Banchero went with the first pick. And you told me 5 months ago,
after game one,
you told me this guy is number one pick. Book it. And then everybody said he's not going to be number one pick. And then 2 weeks ago, you came to Sweden. We talked about it. You told me he's going to be number one pick. I promise you, book it. And if he's not, everybody's stupid. That's what you told me 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Lord and behold,
the day before the draft.
So yeah. What did you? It's crazy because I was like, Terrence, you're wrong. And then like in the last second, it switched.
So let me pause you right there. Let me pause you exactly right there, Keisha. How many times throughout our friendship of 10+ years have you said that?
Yeah, a lot of times.
Just making sure we're on the same page.
What was it in his game that made you say, oh, he's going to definitely be number one pick, and that's just what's going to happen?
Well, he's 6'10", 260 pounds, and it's muscle. Like, is he the run-and-jump athlete that, like, a Benedict Mathurin is from Arizona? Probably not, but he's 80 pounds heavier and God knows how much taller. And on top of that, one of the key things when it comes to drafting an NBA player is you look at some of the – Chet Holmgren was up there. He was being discussed. Jabari Smith was being discussed. It was those three. Jaden Ivey, they were talking about him a little bit, but they're going to push him out. He's not in quite that tire. But the other two, Jabari Smith, was a really good player. Shot 42.5% from three at Auburn as a freshman. Just turned 18 years old. 6'10", 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Really athletic. I think he took more shots than he had dribbles all year. To me, that's alarming.
Really?
Yeah, to me, that's alarming. So That's one. Chet Holmgren is 7 foot, 190 pounds. Him and what's your name? What's your guy's name? Alexei
Pokushevsky.
Pokushevsky, like those guys, like they're going to combine to weigh 100 kilos together, and they're both over 7 feet tall. So like, there's problems with Chet that worry me too. Offensively, he's not going to be able to do what he did at Gonzaga because NBA guys are just going to beast him.
But he can come out to shoot at least,
and he can really rim protect as long as he's not the one guarding the ball. He can. He's a good help side defender. Paolo brings to the table one thing that is so rare in the world, and that's ability to get offense by himself. There's nobody who's going to be able to guard him. At 6'10", 260, he's supremely quick. His jump shot is not broken. He shot 34% from three. That's going to raise because the shot's not broken. He has a little bit of a hitch at the top, but that'll be fixed with repetition. That body size, that short area quickness, and what I mean by that is he can score in two dribbles, and he can use his jab step to get shots. Shot creation at an NBA level, at an elite level, is so freaking hard to find these days that when you find it, you have to take it.
Okay.
Because you can find other guys who shoot 42.5% from three. You can find really skinny seven-footers to protect the rim. What you have a hard time to find is somebody who can create shots whenever they want at a high level. And not to mention, guy's a good passer. You can run some break offense through him where he's the trail guy and he can operate on the outside. He's going to be able to shoot from NBA range. Short area quickness is the one for me that's huge because the game is wide open. So he's going to be able to score one-on-one. Plus, if they do double, he's a good enough passer. It was a no-brainer for me because of body size, quickness, his ability to score.
You called it right away. That's super impressive. I thought you were going to run victory laps on Twitter, but you didn't.
I don't, yeah.
Because people called you crazy when you said that. I remember you saying, like, oh, he's the best Duke prospect ever, and, like, he's going to be number one pick.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, Terrence, you're on drugs.
No. I said he's the best. What got construed was I think people thought I said he was the best Duke player ever. That's not the case. No. The best NBA prospect I thought was fairly reasonable. That's including Jason Tatum. And the reason I say that is Jason Tatum coming out of college was 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Grant Hill coming out of college, 6'8", 205 pounds. Paolo's 6'10", 260 pounds.
Do you think Paolo is going to average right away?
18.
18 and
18 right away.
18 and 9?
18 and 10, 18 and 9.5, something like that. 3-4 assists because teams are going to throw guys at him.
If he doesn't develop his three-point shot, which I've seen his shot too, I think also he's going to be a decent shooter at least.
If he can get to 36 to 30%.
Oh, 36 is great. But
it's fine.
It's great for him. Yeah. It would be great for him because he would open up so much.
Absolutely.
But do you see him, even without developing three-point shot, do you see him averaging maybe 22 and 10 in the future on a solid team?
Yeah.
Okay.
This guy's going to be rookie of the year. He's going to play. He's going to be at least five-time All-Star.
Okay.
Like this is – because body-wise, it's so hard to guard guys. Like they're just not built like that
anymore. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the way he moves, and he's a good passer. He's a really,
he's a really good
passer.
And that's something that helps too, because you see LeBron, everybody has to guard LeBron one-on-one, even in his prime.
Yeah.
Because if you doubled LeBron,
forget
it.
Yeah.
You're forcing
him
to score.
So I'm buying a lot of stocks in Detroit Pistons. And like buying stocks in Detroit Pistons, historically, last 12, 13 years, has been the worst investment you can make. But I'm buying stocks, Theo. I'm buying a lot of stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham, I think he's going to work. I think they have something special there. What do you think?
Well, you have a little bit of thunder and lightning with Thunder with Cade Cunningham at 6'9", however tall. And he operates more like a surgeon. And he's diagramming pick and rolls and everything. And then you have Jaden Ivey, who is a Russell Westbrook type athlete. And he's got that type of explosion towards the basket. So you have this live wire. And then you have Mr. Solid right there. And then you go to the trade market. You grab Jalen Durham, who's got a huge catch radius, who can catch all the alley-oops. I was wondering what they were doing with Jeremy Grant. I think they were just shedding some cap space in order to continue to get younger and bring in a couple of other guys. Miles Bridges has been a guy that they're talking about. like, that's going to be exciting. And I love the fit of those two guards, because whenever Jaden Ivey goes nuts, and he's going to go nuts, I think we need to just go ahead.
With that athleticism, he's gone.
That's what's going to make him really good, is his otherworldly athleticism. But then you have Cade Cunningham beside him, who's a very good at, he's a good NBA, not a great one. He's a good NBA athlete, but he's such a surge and he's got good size. Hypothetically, they should be a really good defensive team. Hypothetically, Jaden Ivey was an awful defender in college, even playing at Purdue. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But both of those guys can together on paper, it looks like, man, that's going to be a fun backcourt to watch for at least the next 6-7 years.
The thing is, like, when I look at Jaden Ivey, he has his shortcomings and his weaknesses. But, like,
there's so few people in the world that look like that.
Exactly. Why wouldn't he be as productive as De'Aaron Fox? I mean,
I love De'Aaron Fox.
You love De'Aaron Fox?
I love De'Aaron
Fox. I love him too. Like, on our podcast, Bank Benmana, like, I've stood up for him. But, like, in the end, his three-point shot is not getting better. Him as a passer, he's not really developing.
There's part of that that's true, but there's also a part of it that De'Aaron Fox is playing for the freaking Kings, and he has to create all those threes on his own.
Halliburton is better than De'Aaron Fox. I've watched them play. I think Halliburton is better.
Nick, you've run Nick's corner for a long time now, and it's okay to be wrong. So I'm going to let you be wrong. But De'Aaron Fox is a dude.
And is he better than Tyrese Halliburton?
In my opinion, yes, because there's more weapons. There's better ability to get downhill. Tyrese Halliburton's
super talented. I love De'Aaron Fox. I would like him.
If I had to pick between the two, I'm picking De'Aaron Fox.
That's what the Sacramento Kings did. And I think that they made a bad decision. What I will tell you is that Ivy, why wouldn't
be? Yeah, he doesn't pass it like De'Aaron Fox. He doesn't.
But he's bigger than De'Aaron Fox.
He is. Why are you comparing it to?
Because both are guards that are like electrifying, that had questions about their shooting coming out of college. I know.
Jaden Ivey shot 42% from three.
What?
Look at it.
Did he?
Shot over 40% from three.
Why are people questioning his?
It comes from below his chin.
He shot 42% of
40 something, 41 or 42.
Are people, because like podcasts and shit I listen to, they're like.
Yeah, it's just because of where it comes from.
Oh, so it's another reliable shooting. Yeah,
it's a little bit of a weird thing. People are not buying stock in it.
42, Jesus Christ.
It's 42.
Why isn't that guy a first pick in the draft?
Because his decision making's awful and he hadn't guarded anybody since high school.
Okay. Okay, bad defense. Okay, I got it.
And he doesn't read the game well. Like, he misses passes. Okay. Misses them. But here's the thing, too, is he was a highly effective rim attack guy in college, especially in that league in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is really heavily scouted, so it's tight. It's really hard to get to the rim there. Like, you're going to have to take some tough shots. And he was still able to get to the rim. That tells you what kind of athlete he is. And the Big Ten is such a difficult thing to do that.
Yeah, and the spacing is not there. And like,
yeah, in the NBA, spacing is going to be there.
Exactly, he's going to be good. I'm like pretty sure he's going to.
Yeah,
be
and everything. So like, he's going to have much. Like, he's dunking over people in college, and everybody's like, "Well, that doesn't mean you're going to dunk in the NBA." No, but you're going to have the pathway to get to dunk.
Yeah,
like, you're still going to have to finish over 7-footers, but you're going to have the pathway to get there. And once there's so few people that are built like Jaden Ivey with that type of athleticism, you get to the rim, you're going to have more opportunities to get there. And then you have to have that athletic ability to finish, and he has that athletic ability.
You mentioned Chet Holmgren, and you brought up the same thing everybody else brought up about him being super skinny. Like, there's a difference between being skinny and, like, super skinny. And we've seen Kevin Durant come in super skinny and, like, become
that's
strong enough
one.
To...
That's a hard one, though, because Kevin Durant's a two-guard.
Yes, and plus, like, a lot of those small guys never get super big. You know?
Yeah, he's not going to put on a ton of weight.
So... Why is this French kid, Victor Wembanyama, a lot of people say he's like the best prospect, one of the best ever?
He's built different than Chet.
Okay.
He's built different. I've seen Chet in person several times. Really, really narrow. I'm talking like really skinny shoulders.
No shoulders, okay.
No hips. Okay. Like, he's just, it's like you've got one of those toys that you could just stretch out. You know what I mean? Just pull in and stretch out. The shoulders aren't getting, Wemby, like, shoulders are there. So you're going to be able to put on weight.
Yeah.
He's going to look very similar to what Rudy Gobert looks like now, later, because of those shoulders.
Okay, I get it.
Those shoulders. Like, the best that Chet Holmgren is going to look is like Kevin Durant. Yeah. That's the best he's going to look. Yeah. And he doesn't have the same skill level that Kevin Durant
was. Definitely does not.
No. So, but what you get with Chet is you're going to get a pick and pop five. You're going to be able to play wide open. The Thunder's got they're starting to get some pieces, and they've got some guys that can get to the rim. And offensively, Chet's going to be able to pull guys out. He's got some skill that he's going to be able to use on the perimeter. Defensively is what changes the game for Chet, as long as he doesn't have to guard the ball. Because what's going to happen is, we talked to Eric Musselman after the season this year, talking about the different picks at Philly 68. And they were like, well, what does Jabari do? He coached against all three. Arkansas played Duke, Gonzaga, and Auburn. Jabari Smith, limit his catch and shoot opportunities, let his crazy guards do whatever they want to do, and just don't let him get catch and shoot opportunities. So you eliminated him a little bit. Chet Holmgren, offensively, just make sure you picked him up, and he's not going to do a ton off the dribble because his body size isn't going to be able to, withstand all this stuff. And then defensively against Chet, what you do is if you attack his chest, because of how he's built and how weak his core is, whenever you attack him, he's going to hunch over. Because you hit him in the belly with the shoulder, he's going to hunch over. You're going to be able to get him in foul trouble quick. So if he doesn't guard the ball and he's just on help side, he can block everything on help side. But if he's guarding the ball, he's going to struggle more and more. What's going to happen in the NBA is there's a lot of beasts in the NBA. I'm talking the world's top.
Yeah.
Like, you attack Chet's chest and he fouls, you can be able to get him out in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's going to be hard for him. I'm interested to see how he adjusts. I don't think he's going to be able to because he's too skinny. It's going to be too difficult.
Okay.
But that being said, he fits Oklahoma City perfectly because, one, you can hide him a little bit against opposing fives that aren't offensively oriented. So he can roam the paint and be a shot blocker. And he can shoot. That's right.
Yeah,
so he fits what they do, but he didn't – Musselman said this. He didn't pose the shot creation that Paolo Banchero had.
No, he doesn't.
Because Banchero, he said, this is the only one we didn't have anything for.
And then Victor Wembanyama, he can, like, create. He can dribble. It's crazy. Like, I'm worried, Terrence, that, like – not worried, but I feel like
– players like me and you are extinct.
Yeah, so I think what's going to happen in the future is, like, you know, all these Shaqs and Hakeems and Dwight Howards and all these guys, we're going to have them, but they're all going to be able to dribble and shoot.
Yeah.
And that's going to make them super valuable. And the short guys like Isaiah Thomas or like Chris Paul. Not Chris Paul. Chris Paul is so good. Chris Pauls are always going to get a shot. But, like, those in-between dudes, you know, they have to work themselves up. I don't know if you're going to have a dude like Isaiah Thomas that's 5'9" ever again get a shot to play and average 35 minutes per game.
Yeah. No, it's going to be hard. The thing is the NBA is such a copycat league. Once Steph retires, Steph's 34 years old. Like, it's getting close. Like, he might be able to play 3-4 more years, probably collect another $1 billion. And then, like, but then he's going to be close to finished. And once he gets out of the league, teams are no longer going to be trying to compete with Golden State and catch up with Golden State. They're going to be trying to catch up to the next team and whatever they do differently. Like, if you look at the Grizzlies draft this year, they're drafting just to compete with Golden State. They get David Roddy from Colorado State, who's 6'6", 250 pounds. They're getting him just to guard Draymond.
Yeah.
Like, they have John Morant, who can chase guys.
Guard Draymond? But
to compete with Draymond, you know what I'm saying? He's quick enough laterally to stay in front of him. Some bigger guys can't do that. So they're drafting to beat that team. What happened with the Lakers a few years ago when Shaq was there and Kobe was there? Who does Utah have? Greg Ostertag. Who did the Kings? They just hired Scott Pollard to just foul all the time. We talked about this the other day. It's a copycat league. I'm curious to see where the game goes next. Because now everybody's going 6'7", 6'8", the Peter Okwist model, and they're trying to do ultra switchable. What's next is the thing. And I think what's going to be next is they're either going to get huge, and I don't mean when Wimby. It's going to be somebody that comes in that's like a Joel Embiid that can score 70% of the rim, and then you're going to have to adapt to that.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be super small, quick guards that just get by all these 7-footers because the 7-footers can't keep up.
Okay.
So
sounds logical.
Yeah. So it's always, there's always a yin to the current yang. What's the yin? What's the next yin is my question once Steph Curry retires.
Let us go further to a player that's going to play in Sweden in a couple of days, Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
You, you said on your podcast that Keegan Murray, the fourth pick in this year's draft, his father played in Sweden, by the way.
Yeah.
You said that he's a
draft picks. He's draft picks. Swedish fathers. So keep in mind, Damon Jack Oglesby, high school class of 2036. He's got a Swedish passport. He's the next one.
Yeah, he's going to be a great player. He's great. Six. He's already number one that's ranked 6 year old in the United States.
Yeah, no question. According to every outlet.
So, anyways, you said that Keegan Murray, the number four pick in the draft, you said that he's average athletic in the NBA.
Yeah.
And then you got destroyed by the fans from Iowa.
Screw those fans.
And you destroy them back.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look like at a dude like Luka Doncic,
yeah,
he's never been super athletic. He's not. I mean, there's a people just like in Keegan Murray's case that state, oh, he's super athletic. He just uses it in a other way. Blah blah. I don't think Luka is super athletic.
Nobody's quick.
Is he really?
Yes, he's quick in small spaces.
Quick in small spaces. Yeah, that sounds.
That is the biggest key to playing in the half court at the professional level. Are you quick in small spaces? And not only is that, but he plays the point guard. How big is Luka?
That's the thing. Like, everybody says he's like 201 centimeters. I say bullshit.
Yeah. I think
and I'm gonna see it live. Now I'm going to make because he looks huge. Yeah.
Keep in mind, whenever you're evaluating and looking at these players, it's not just how tall you are. It's how long your arms are. It's your standing reach. It's your shoulder size. Like, shoulder size is so important because those are the big, strong guys. So, like, whenever Luka uses, you know, his step-back move, like, that's a quick little jerk. It looks slow. But the fact that he's able to pull back so quick and get into that shot, that's a quick move. But the thing is he's creating so much space on top of that.
Yeah.
And he's big.
He's huge.
So, like, say he's not fast, but he's quick. That's two completely different things. So watch him whenever he uses ball screens, whenever they play Sweden here in a few days. Like, if he can't blow past them, he's going to keep him on his back because he's so strong.
Strong, yeah.
And he's always going to be able to see the next play. And he's so deliberate. And that step is quicker than I think people realize. And I compare him a little bit to what, like, if you used to watch Paul Pierce play and when he was in his prime, when you watch Paul Pierce on television, you're like, I don't know how this dude scores. He's slow.
Exactly.
You see him in person, you're like, this dude's an athlete. It's just he rocks people to sleep a little bit and then bang,
yeah,
he's gone. Watch Luka play, how he manages his weight if he doesn't blow by guys, and then watch
when often he blows by. He just gets enough separation.
Watch when he decides to separate.
Yeah.
Watch when and it's going to be hard. Like, you're going to be calling the game, right? Like, it's going to be hard to emphasize that to the viewing audience on television. But his quickness in that small burst to get to the spot that he wants to get to is elite. And then everything else is slow because it's almost like he wants you to feel that way.
So that's the thing. Like, I've never seen anything like him. He's 23 years old. He literally, if he wanted to score 50 on Sweden, he would do it.
Yeah.
Easily. That's crazy.
Yeah.
He's just a kid. I mean, if you look at it, 23 is not a kid, but you know what I'm trying to say? He's still young.
We have seen it before, but it was before me and you were alive.
Cool.
Larry Bird.
Okay, yeah. There's been a couple of dudes that have been 23 and super talented, dominant. But I just feel like in his case, it's so unorthodox because it's, to my eye, it looks like he's doing it kind of slow. But when you explain it like that, like, I understand short bursts.
Well, you're going to see it in person.
Yeah, you're going
to. So, like, that was a big thing. I watched the Celtics when KG and Rondo and all those guys, I watched the playoff game when they went down to Atlanta and I went and sat close to the bench.
2008.
Yeah. I went, no, this was after I was out.
Okay.
This was after I was out.
Okay.
So during the summer, I'd come back and then I went to go watch a game. And it was like, you didn't realize how big and strong. And then that quick burst is stupid.
Yeah.
And it was so hard to see that on television. But once you see it in person, you're like, oh man, that's how he gets space.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
And Luka's got the same thing. I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's going to be fun because...
That being said, Luka might have 12 points, 3 assists, and 3 rebounds.
Yeah, it's more possible that he's going to have like 12, 5, and 4 than he's going to go off. Slovenia is probably not going to play a tight game so that he has to play like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be realistic. But the the thing with his size too. Like I remember when they played Clippers a couple of years ago, and Ty Lue benched Patrick Beverley because Patrick Beverley looked like a child. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Beverley, he's 6'2". He's like 6'2", 6'3". He looked round. Like a child. Like, you know, like Damon out there when he's trying to guard me and you. Yeah. It was almost like that. So I think Luka is taller, but who knows? Well, let's go to the next subject, my friend T.O. Mm-hmm.
Switch he basketball. He never gets rattled.
No, he does not. He does not.
That's it. And Pat Beverley thrives off people getting rattled.
Yeah.
So Luka never gets rattled.
He gets rattled by the refs though. But anyways, Swedish basketball. So
you just one up me for no reason. That's what just happened right there.
You always say to me, not always, but from time to time, we'd be talking about something. You'd be like, "That's why Swedish basketball is not getting better, and that's why Swedish basketball is like this, and that's why." You've been in Sweden for a lot of years.
I haven't said that about a lot of different things. I've said it about a couple of things.
Okay. And I so know what are the things you feel like?
Access. Like, for example, in the States, I'm 34 years old. I'm old. I love to play still 2-3 times a week. I love to just get out there. You bullshit with the guys. It's fun. Like, there's always a gym for me to play at if I want to go play. There's always a game going on if I wanted to go play. Like, every gym in Sweden's locked to the gills. You can't get into play. Like, the kids can't just go and shoot. And then not on top of that, like, during the winter, you can't get, like, outside you can go play, yada, yada, yada. But there's not a culture of, hey, man, let's just go play. Let's just go play. Like, me, you, and some of these other guys, we've been playing over the past couple nights, but there just doesn't seem to be that. We have community centers and gyms that are open from this time to this time. Sweden doesn't have that. Like, we'll be like, hey, guys, I'm going to open the gym from 5 to 8 o'clock. Come when you want, if you want. We'll get 10 guys there so fast. We'll be able to play.
And even YMCAs and stuff like that.
So yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking just off the top of my head, I live in a small town. I live in Clemson, which Clemson's big when the students are there. But even so, like, the university is its own self in the town. Town is small. We have the community center. We have a couple of other churches that'll open the gym up for kids to play. If you want to play, there's a gym for you to play. Sweden doesn't have that. I just remember, like, if I want to get extra shots up, it was really difficult to find that because the gym would be closed.
Yeah.
There's always access in the States to play. In Sweden, it's like you're scratching and clawing to find a gym just to go shoot. Like, you want to talk about one of the reasons, besides the mentality, Swedish basketball players, they're not the dude. Well, it's hard to get in the gym as much as you would like.
Exactly.
Right? That's a big thing in my mind, just to be able to play. Like, we played a lot. We played a lot. That's I grew up. So my mom, when I was in middle school, she really trusted the guy that worked at the local community center in a small town. She would drop me off at, you know, 9, 10 in the morning. She'd give me $5 for lunch. And she'd drop us off. She'd come back and give us a $6.
Yeah.
And we would play all day long.
So what you're trying to say is, like, even if there's a kid that wants to get better, he's not going to get, like, the gym to play in. And he's never going to get, like, high-quality 505s during the summer.
Think about these games that we're playing. For those listening, I keep in mind this is a podcast. Me and Nick end up just talking anyway, but you know, we had a couple of young kids that have never played basketball, but they love basketball. But how are they supposed to get better?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, if they want to be a part of our game and continue to play, like, they got to develop some kind of skills. You do that on your own. Like, you can do all the drills you want. You can do all these, we won't keep score, everybody pass it and everybody touch it you want. But it comes down to, like, hey, like, you have to play. You have to be around a game. You have to have ball in your hands. And in Sweden, I haven't seen that as much. And I haven't seen, like, you know, guys just get together and play. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. And I'm happy that it's happened on this trip because I enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
But it just, that's one of the big things. Like, if we wanted to go play at an indoor court, we've been playing outside because it's available. We want to get to an indoor court. Like, you're a teacher. How would that work?
Yeah.
Like, you're a teacher at a school here in town. Like, could you get the gym if you wanted it right
no,
away?
No.
That's an issue.
Yeah, that's an issue. And, access. You know what, Terrence? This is Borås. In Stockholm, it's 100 times worse. Like availability for like soccer and basketball court, it does not exist. It's a huge problem. So I would actually have to agree with you on that one because
look, it keeps kids out of trouble too. Like they go play basketball, yeah. They're not getting into nonsense. Yeah. Start putting up courts.
Yeah, courts and like closed school gyms that are available for kids.
Yeah, because and say it rains all the time. Like in Borås, it rains all the freaking time. Yeah. You know how cheap it is to throw down a slab of asphalt and then put like a not a tent, but like a tarp or something to where the water doesn't get down. So cheap.
You know,
it's not like Sweden doesn't have the money. Y'all pay so many damn taxes, it's insane.
You know how many dudes in Sweden there are that like, they will go during the summer and they will like shoot maybe 300 shots a day. Just stand still, three-pointers. And they think they have the craziest work ethic.
Nah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, like they have the crazy. But like, no, you have to play 5-on-5 and you have to play 5-on-5 against great dudes too to get better. How many guys have you seen in your life, both me and you, where like they're talented and they won summer, they just grow and they played so much, they just come back and kill it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dudes that have that story and you're not going to get that story if you just grow and not play.
Yeah.
You have to play. You have to like work on your game.
Yeah. You can't just sit and shoot shots by yourself.
Yeah.
Like
stand still.
Like what we would do during the summers whenever I was still playing, like I would work out with a guy named Derek Hamilton, who played for Jerusalem for a long time, was Greek League MVP back in the mid-90s.
Greek Cup.
Yeah.
No, I'm just joking.
Sure I'm sure he is. Who knows? He's an MVP or something. But he would work us out. It'd be me, Jody Meeks, Jordan Hill, James White, Breon Rush, who was a really good player. Like, we had all these guys get together. We played pickup. J.J. Yeah. Manny plays in Belgium. Yeah. Like, a bunch of guys that could play. So you create these situations where you have to guard and you have to play and you have to read situations. And when you get to practice, now Pat was different. Pat let us play and figure it out. That's one of the reasons like a lot of us got, that's mine, man. What are you doing? You taking my coffee? That's one of the reasons we were good at certain things because we played all the time.
Yeah.
We just played.
Yeah.
And Pat Ryan, like his philosophy would be awesome for middle and high schoolers that are learning the game and have to figure it out on their own. Yeah. Just play and play and play and figure it out and go fast. Learn on the fly.
Yeah.
But you take away your ability to learn on the fly when you don't play. Could you get better at shooting? Sure. Could you get better at dribbling a little bit? Maybe.
Yeah.
But you got to play games.
You have to. Against good opponents.
You can fine-tune and get shots up.
Yeah.
Fine-tune and get shots up. But you got to play.
Yeah. And then you mentioned mentality. You always complain about Swedish mentality.
What? I don't complain.
Basketball mentality.
I want to be clear. I love the Swedish mentality. I love Swedish people. The mentality of how I attack everyday life is very different in that everything I do, I look at it as a win or a loss. I don't do just to do.
Yeah.
Which hurt me. Because, for example, we looked at the we talked about it earlier, my stats. Like, I at least got to give us a chance to win.
Yeah.
If I get beat by 30 and I play fine, that's fine. Then I'm just doing. I'm not trying to win.
Yeah.
Everything is a win or a loss. It's one of the reasons I've been good now at what I'm doing now, because I see everything as that I win it or I lose it. When it comes to Sweden, there's no – with the basketball – and I'm just talking about basketball players. I'm just talking about – like, there's a reason you bring over Americans, because they're more assertive going to the basket. They're more assertive trying to score, more assertive doing the things. You know, Swedes are good at doing everything. It's like a jack of all trades, master of none type of deal. Like, you're good at everything. Like, look at Fredrik Andersson. He's a really solid shooter. He's a solid ball handler. Solid defender. What's he great at? And that's not a shot at Fredrik. It's what you see from a lot of these guys. You know what I'm saying? And it's just kind of like, what do you do great?
Yeah. So there's one interesting thing. When I think about Swedish players and I think about how many of them can just take the ball and create one-on-one during the whole game, there's like two of them maybe. there's this kid, Ola Lundqvist. He's young. He has had a lot of injury problems, but I always
that's
liked
the kid who played Jämtland.
Yeah, but I always liked him because he can play 1-on-1. Like
against, he did when I was here. Are we talking about the same guy?
Yeah, he's a
yeah.
He actually played in the highest league when you were in Umeå.
Yeah,
he was super young back then. But like that's the thing. I really wanted him to be good, and because Sweden needs a dude that that can just take a ball and play 1-on-1 and create, and he can do that. But we don't have that, and I think it's part of the problem because nobody's supposed to be like 12 years old, just grab the ball and play 1-on-1. Like you're gonna look crazy.
Well, you don't play 1-on-1. You don't play.
Yeah.
You don't play.
But even when you play, like everybody's trying to say, oh, everybody needs to touch the ball, you know, blah blah blah. So you just
see, we also don't have that either. Like you start picking teams and you start making teams when you're 7, 8 years old.
That's
in
crazy.
Some places. Like kids get cut.
That's crazy.
Like kids will get cut.
I just think that's not really
but
good
you
way
say
to...
that. You say that, and then guys that in the whole philosophy behind that thinking in Sweden is like, well, we want people to enjoy the game, and we want people to enjoy it for a long time. Well, it's not happening.
They're not.
It's not
if
happening.
They suck.
Yeah, well, it's not happening, right? And the thing is like in the States, guys will get cut, and they'll still go around and play.
Yeah,
and it's. And you, the point is to win. Where's the competitive? Like you win and you play, and you play 1-on-1. Like we would play. That would be a huge part of what we did after every workout is play 1-on-1, because you have to learn how to create shots.
I got cut in Serbia when I was 10.
See, that's too old in my mind.
And that made me so furious.
Yeah,
I worked so hard. And I never became a good player. Like me and Terrence, we always have this discussion. Terrence tries to make it look like I was a really good player.
You weren't a really good player, but you were a solid player.
You said that I would be able to play low division one basketball, and I just don't agree. And you know what, Terrence? That's my strength. I realized early that I'm not really good basketball player, and that's, you know, a
strength. I'm not sitting here saying you would average 30. What I'm sitting here saying is, like, you could play for Campbell and then be a backup point guard and really get in there and defend and bring your team energy and run the offense. Okay. That's what I said. I didn't say get in there and be all league. I said you could play.
Okay. I think I would have been a solid Division II player.
I think you're incorrect.
Okay. I mean, thanks, I guess. But yeah. Is there anything else you want to bring up before we finish?
How long have we been going?
1 hour, 40 minutes.
I feel like I've been rushed this whole time. Like,
no, I had to rush you through your career. Because if we talked about your career, it would take us 5 hours. Because it's that crazy.
Yeah.
So I had to like.
We're gonna have to split this up and do a biannual podcast. Like every 2 years, I'll come into your apartment.
But is there anything else you want to talk about? An interesting subject?
No, I think the thing is Swedish mentality as a whole is so much different than where I grew up from. So I don't want to, and it's for better. And it's for worse. There's positives and there's negatives. When we're talking about basketball, there's obvious positives because you look at all these players that are around Sweden and they can fit into a role. One of the reasons that I wasn't as good a pro as what I could have been is because I didn't have that mentality.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So like if I had a Swedish mentality, I for sure would have played in ACB for a long time.
You probably would.
I would have. There's no like.
Yeah.
So, like, if I had that mentality of being able to blend in and be a part, as opposed to taking the bull by the horns all the time and just fuck it, do it myself, which is a very American way of thinking, I could have been a much better player at the European level. That being said, I was a much better player at the college level because of the mentality I had.
Yeah.
So, looking back, that's kind of where the difference went right away. Like,
yeah.
If you look at it from a different situation, say I stay for 4 years and I get a shot in the NBA and then I hit 5 threes in a preseason game, my life changes. Yeah. My mentality is looked at as a strength as opposed to a weakness like it was here in a lot of places, right? So I want to make sure that I'm clear in saying that while the mentalities are very different, there's certainly strengths to both mentalities, and you see it now with Marcus Ericsson. You see it with all these Swedish guys that are able to go around and play roles. That's a great thing in certain respects.
Yeah.
And you look at the mentality of an American guy like myself, it's a great thing in certain respects. And it has been really good for me in what I'm doing now and my business ventures aside from all that. It's been very good to me there.
Yeah.
But it's there's positives with everything and there's negatives with everything. So there's always that happy medium. I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, because neither one of them are right, neither one of them are wrong. So it's just how you want to look at it. Like, it, if I could have adapted, been multiple personalities, I probably would have benefited, but I can't do that. I'm me. Yeah. I'm a product of what I've been around.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But I just wanted to make clear that there's nothing wrong with the Swedish mentality. It's just the difference in the mentality that I grew up with, and those are the things that I see that are different.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point, Terrence. You made a lot of good points. You made a lot of good points. Those rats in Georgia. I hope somebody is going to like take care of that problem.
They're probably still laying there.
I would bet they're still there. And thanks for coming.
Thank you.
It's an honor. You're a great friend. We need to do this more often. You know.
Yeah, once every 3 or 4 years.
Once a year.
That's kind of the pace we're on. Once every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Well, you're going to go to Serbia and watch World Cup qualifiers. So, yeah, and you're going to eat dinner with John Calipari.
And Ettore Messina. We're gonna
Ettore Messina.
Boy from Bale Basket. So I got invited to the big coaching clinic in Belgrade. So I'm going to be going to that. And I'm going to watch Belgium against Serbia.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun. It's really cool part of our job. Is you get to do a lot of other cool shit.
Yeah,
I get invited to a lot of random stuff, so I'm excited about it. I've never been to Belgrade. You've recommended a fire pancake spot.
Yeah, there's a fire pancake place.
Fire pancakes.
Like, that pancake, you're going to be shocked when you see how big it is.
I can't wait to see these pancakes. Yeah, like, yeah. If there's one thing that I get to see in Serbia, it's these fucking pancakes.
They're huge. It's like a regular cake size. I'm not fucking with you.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. So, Terrence, my intro is my outro too. Can we please sing together, me and you? You know what song it is.
I can't remember.